Stevie Wonder's Living in the City is about the racism and poverty that exist in our cities. That racism manifests in many different ways. Today's Solution to Violence program, with the help of Denisha Rivers, will discuss issues facing Louisville, Kentucky, and Jefferson County. Hi, folks. We are Solutions to Violence. We're happy you could join us today. You're listening to Forward Radio, WFMP 106.5 FM. Solutions to Violence is a program of and sponsored by Forward Radio. The following is part of WFMP's Public Affairs Educational Program. Views expressed are those of our guests and not the station or that of its board of directors. If you'd like to share your views, you may contact us at solutionsofviolence18@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Our guest today is Denisha Rivers. Denisha is a political activist currently running for Kentucky's Jefferson County Metro Council, District 4. Denisha Rivers, welcome to Solutions to Violence.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
All right. So, Denisha Rivers, your resume demonstrates quite a history. You've been a healthcare professional, a member of the National Council for Negro Women 2023 to present, a Louisville Metro Council Women Ambassador 2023 to present, involved in the leadership program of Louisville Black Archives 2023 to present, a U.S. Black Business Chamber recipient. You're also involved in Charles Booker's campaign, Ray Baker's campaign for Metro Council. How and why does one go from a healthcare professional to being deeply involved in politics?
You know, politics was actually the last thing on my mind. The reason why is when I left healthcare, I wanted to take my bedside compassion, helping those that were sick and ill out to the community. And that is what I have done. You know, I didn't know where my resources were going to come from. I didn't even know who to connect with. Didn't really have a lot of money. I just wanted to know what was on the other side, is just wanting to help other people. Knowing that we had so many issues within the Black community, I just wanted to be a part of the process. I just wanted to help out with a solution. Being in healthcare, we have to remember this, like healthcare is how someone lives, right? It's the quality of life. So being in healthcare actually showed me how important it is for someone to have sustainability in their household, to have the finances, the resources, the money, the food, the medicine, how important it is to have those things in your household, down to your mental status, to your social economics, to transportation. All of that is holistic health. Just living in neighborhoods, just seeing the decline. You know, I'm born and raised in Louisville, Kentucky, and what I see now is not what I remembered at all. And it has been such a declining state. When I went into, you know, community activism, I started my own nonprofit organization, Vision of Life Outreach Ministries, where we assist homeless families, homeless youth with emergency assistance, sometimes temporary shelters, temporary providing them assistance where they needed, a hotel stay, down to food, to counseling, to job training, just more of a holistic approach, you know, from having health fairs to just having events in parks and areas where there were families, right? Just changing the environment, just giving them some type of hope, some type of direction, some type of information and education that can help them in the situation that they're currently may be in. Politics, it's so funny that you asked me that, because someone said, Renee, you should, you know, because they call me Renee in the community. They're like, you should think about going into politics. And I said, well, how so? Because I really don't have the background as far as what you could say politics. They said, no. You're politicking. Yeah, you are. And I'm like, oh, I am. They're like, oh, yeah, believe me, you are. And I said, oh, well, okay, well, if you say so, if you consider that politicking, okay, maybe I am politicking, because just because I'm advocating for others and advocating for people and able to use my God-given talent and gift and the compassion to help other people to use their voice, yeah, So that's where I'm at. And then, you know, all the resources and opportunities that I've actually have been in front of and been asked to do, be and a part of, sitting on different boards and positions and leadership. This all started back in 2018. So I actually helped make a lot of decisions on some boards that $1 million project that I am involved in. So even with some community development, I am the founder of Black Entrepreneur Louisville here, over 2,000 members. So I've been very, very active and very involved. So these issues that are going on right now and probably will continue to keep going, I decide, hey, this is where I need to be. This is breaking down the system in such way that is working for us, for families, and not against us, right? For the experiences I've had, for the experiences that I've seen and what I've done, dealt with in my own life and meeting so many different families, because I work with JCPS as well. So these are a lot of things that, would like to bring to the table, and running district, you know, running for District 4 is very personal on so many levels.
You sound like Plato coming across with that holistic perspective you're coming with.
Oh yeah. Oh yes. Yes. Yeah.
So why have you decided to run for Metro Council for District 4?
Running for District 4 for Metro Council is very personal to me. I can go back having my first son in my 20s. My first apartment was in Old Louisville. I remember catching a bus 6:30 in the morning just to get to the hospital to clock in at 7 o'clock. I remember so many times having hardships as a single mother. I didn't have transportation. So convenience and employment, daycares, shops, it was important to me on where I resided. Daycares that open at 6 o'clock in the morning when I worked down the street less than a mile at the local hospital where I had to clock in at 7 o'clock. And when I got off of work at 2:30, sometimes, or if I even stayed till 6 o'clock at night, I was able to walk because I didn't have transportation. Walk to the bank. I was able to not only that, shop. All of these things are important to me, especially my family, my mother. They were raised in the Parkland neighborhood. I went to Parkland Elementary. Living in this district for a really, really long time, I've been able to, because not only that I'm an entrepreneur, right? I've been able to, I guess you could say, this is my stopping ground. This is my home base. This is my turf, because I attended JCC. I attended Spalding. As an entrepreneur and a business owner and a college student, all these things were walking distance to me. I could go to the library. I could walk to FedEx, the UPS store. Everything that I needed, from printing to my children, we were able to enjoy things, family outings, like going to the Ali Center, the African American Heritage Center, the Frazier's Slugger Museum, walking down to the waterfront, even the times I really have so many memories, especially Central Park, just getting up in the morning, just jogging. It was very safe. And we know we have the police substation there, right? Absolutely love it. I have invested my dollars, even with my own nonprofit organization. We have done so many things with youth and families, with homeless outreach to Smoketown, even Germantown area. We've also had homeless outreach right there in front of JCC, First Street. So I've done a lot, from small business, working with small businesses, to entrepreneur events, to the nightlife, and also working out in the community. So it's really personal to me, because, like I said, even being a mother for a long time, I remember the YMCA, how YMCA Chestnut, I sat on the board, YMCA Chestnut board as well. And I remember YMCA Chestnut in 2nd Street downtown. I was like, oh my God, I got to find a daycare that opens, you know, childcare that has before and after, that is safe, that's educational, where I can just walk to. I just remember that. And since I have boys, you know, the YMCA is just so important. It is so important because, you know, not only the child care, they had affordable child care, but they also play sports, right? So, my children were involved in baseball, soccer, and basketball. All these things are so important to remember, that District 4 is not only just because it is a huge district, right, from the east to the west, but there are so much relevance from history to enjoying times with your family, from traveling, especially when the Kentucky Derby comes in. You have a lot of, you know, such like the Black Jockey and a lot of restaurants in the districts, as far as the bars and the scenery from the Omni. You just have to remember that when you have family that come in town, you can enjoy so much. That's why I'm running for District 4, because this is personal to me. And I want to make sure that I help other families, small businesses and businesses, to continue to fight for their communities and to protect their investment, because your livelihood is your investment. Downtown is an investment. All of this is an investment. And I know times have changed. They certainly changed, because like I said, I'm born and raised in Louisville. I remember the Galleria, so, and the Fashion Club, and Wendy's was upstairs and all these things. And these are the things that a lot of us that have worked and lived downtown, we miss. So we want to make sure that we continue to support our businesses on 4th Street as well, from Nulu and even the Black businesses in Russell. We cannot forget Russell Development. I work hand in hand with a lot of these organizations and small Black minority women-owned led businesses, and it's very important that we make sure that we keep continuing supporting and funding and having the grants out there help support organizations like the Urban League and AMP and, you know, L Home and all of these other organizations that are doing wonderful things out here that has been impactful when it comes to building up District 4 from the Metro United Way. When I tell you that I can never forget those people who helped me and those organizations who have helped me, I want to make sure that I'm in a position where I can help others as well.
Okay, so fair enough. Denisha Rivers, the District 4, as you pointed out, includes Butchertown, California, Clifton,
yes,
Park, Downtown, Old Louisville, Parkland, Phoenix Hill, Portland, Russell, and Smoketown. Quite an expansive district. So District 4 includes folks from working class families, middle class families, and folks from extremely wealthy families. Quite a diverse population.
Yes, it is.
Metro Council representative, how can you support legislation that meets the needs of such a diverse population?
Well, I think right now we are in such of a state of an emergency when it comes to the education system, especially with our transportation right now with JCPS, shortage of our teachers, educators, especially African-American teachers. We have a mental health crisis that is going on right now in our schools. It's trickling out in our communities. We have to support our families at all costs and at all risks. Our education system is trying to do the best on what is basically been presented to them as far as the laws that have been passed, the type of funding, and what they're limited to do, you know, especially when it comes to DEI, and they're basically trying to restrict what the teachers can say and what they can do in the classrooms. Every family, what we all have in common is that we want to make sure that we provide for our families. Right. We want to make sure that our wages are protected. We want to make sure that we have enough savings, especially after the pandemic. I think that really just wiped everyone out and caught us off guard. So we want to make sure that we have enough savings. We want to make sure that we have a life savings. We're able to pay for college, able to cover for like emergencies. We want to have a really good education for our children. So I don't care if you Black, brown, white, yellow. I think we all want the best for our family. I think that's one thing that we do have in common. We all want a better quality of life. And we all want to be in a position where we don't have to worry about living paycheck to paycheck. And we want to make sure that we're able to just enjoy those days, to make sure that medical bills are covered. That's what we have in common.
Okay.
That's what we have in common.
Okay, sure. So the Louisville and Jefferson County community faces many problems, as you pointed out, and homelessness is one of those problems, a homeless population. And we see them on the street corners in downtown Louisville as well as in suburban areas. A Courier Journal article penned by Lucas Albach titled, quote, Louisville's unsheltered population has risen significantly in the past year, advocates warn, end quote. published April 21st, 2023, states, quote, in late January last year, a survey by outreach workers found 243 unsheltered people in Louisville, end quote. You're currently the president of Vision of Life Outreach Ministries, a tax-exempt 501c3 nonprofit organization. Their mission is to help homeless families and homeless youth to help restore and rebuild their lives from homelessness to self-independence. How does Jefferson County and Metro Council solve the homeless problem, an ever-increasing problem?
We have a serious problem here in this city, and everyone knows it. We see it every day, especially in this district. You have homeless people wandering all throughout the streets, begging for money. You have them sleeping in alleyways. You have them basically standing in front of courthouses from the east to the west. Some of these people, these traveling homeless that we see, these individuals, are all over the place every single day in front of grocery stores. We have a serious problem that our homeless shelters are overcrowded, underfunded, overcrowded. We don't have enough shelters. We don't have enough day shelters. Churches are trying to do their best. Grassroots nonprofit organizations are trying to do their best, and we still have a serious issue because we have thousands of immigrants coming over, right? They need housing. So you have a population of incarcerated individuals coming out of the prison system. They need housing. You have a broken mental illness, another population, right? They need housing. You have homeless youth. If you remember, months ago, they did the story, and even, you know, I was even getting phone calls myself saying, hey, wait a minute, we got these homeless youth. Can you help us? Do you know who we can call? They're in my office, and they have nowhere to go. Also, you have the Greyhound station that was closed, and they actually moved over there by Wendy's temporarily. And so you have hundreds of homeless people that are traveling, are getting dropped off in our area and don't have anywhere to go. This is a huge problem. You have camps all over through the city, but then we have abandoned houses. We have abandoned apartment buildings. We have abandoned businesses with, you know, with all this space. It's great that the affordable housing, they're passing all the laws for affordable housing. We have this new development. Thank God we have this new, there's a housing crisis here. We have so much development that is happening right now in this district. They knocked down the projects, right? But you got to remember the reason why people were in these projects because they didn't have the income. They didn't have the income or the resources. So it's not that they didn't want to live better. They just didn't have the income or the resources. So they knocked the projects down, right? And then they moved these people out, and half of them didn't even have transportation. So they moved them outskirts, where the reason why they were downtown is because, just like I discussed before, I'm downtown because I have all the resources that I need. My dental office, U of L Dental, is down the street. You know, I'm able to go Vision Works, and my children, I'm able to put them on the bus stop, or we can walk to a school, or put them into programs. It's not that people were comfortable in not a safe environment. They were able to at least be able to maintain what they had. So you're displacing people. So now they got to have a certain income to even come back. So we got to make sure that we provide programs. Okay, so if you're going to come back, you have people, you're living in a 1-2 brick project, but then they built these new, this new affordable housing, which is great. And it's a beautiful apartment. I have every amenity that I need, but I also, right, I need help. You know, where are the programs? I may need some, you know, some counseling, some financial, some credit counseling, some home ownership counseling. Sometimes you're going to remember, like, we have a problem right now as far as there are grandparents that are raising children, their grandchildren, maybe children that are, grandchildren that aren't even theirs because their parents are incarcerated. Both parents are incarcerated. So you have a whole system of a foster care system. They need housing, all of these, but people are on a restricted income. A lot of times you're going to remember because discrimination and racism. And if I did not, you know, if I did not graduate high school, I may have a GED or I did not go to college. All of these are barriers, right? These are barriers. The barriers is from poverty to education to mental illness to trauma to discrimination to all these things, redlining and not understanding your credit and how you can make certain things work for you. You know, it's all about education and knowing how you can use your finances and credit to work for you. And it is such a huge problem. The other day I was driving actually around the district. I drove past, it was Finzer, because, you know, I actually live in that area. And I drove past that area, and there's a food bank over there. I think there's Youthville, there's a food bank over there. Every day, you know, they serve food over there to the homeless. But there were actually people sleeping. This is like in the middle of the day, sleeping on the ground. And I'm not talking about, I mean, you have able-bodied people, men sleeping on the ground. Like, literally, like, this is crazy to me. You have Wave 3 and all these businesses around, but there are people sleeping on the ground. How can we be compassionate residents and citizens of the city, especially when you're in leadership and there's people sleeping on the ground? How can you sleep at night? How can it's inhumane. We have so many apartment buildings, high rises where we can help and put these people into some type of job training, temporary shelter. It looks bad on us. It's a $1 billion industry. This is Kentucky Derby. Casino, all this built down. So you have the Yum Center, all of these things that are creating revenue in this city. And we have such a huge homeless population. A lot of it is from incarceration and mental illness, right? I don't think no one wants to be homeless. People that have a drug problem, people with mental illness. You know, all of these things, and we have to make sure that we do our part to help get these people off the street. So, like, even with the law that the Republicans passed, you know, about the Section 8 vouchers with the private landlords, it's up to them, you know, if they want to take it or not. No one's going to force them. In so many ways, yeah, you're right. You're right. I don't have to accept it if I don't want to accept it. We have to draw a line somewhere. There has to be some type of connection to making sense to all this. It has to be relevant, especially when you have a huge homeless population such as ours. And there are organizations like the Urban League and Metro United Way and Goodwill and VOA, all these places, you know, even when we have these homeless veterans, like there's no, this is what I don't understand. I've been in the military. I'm a veteran. No veteran should be homeless. So we have to do better funding and putting programs and caseworkers, social workers, providing case management to help get these people back on their feet because, you know, we all fall. You know, life isn't perfect. We lose our jobs. A lot of people lost their jobs after the pandemic and standing in lines asking for food are standing in lines for help to pay for LG&E. Anyone can be homeless. Not a lot of us have a lot of savings nowadays with the cost of living going up. Our wages aren't going anywhere, but the cost of living is going up. Now you gotta, like, this is what I know, this factual. Some people in areas, their landlords have been increasing the rent. They're like, oh, we'll pay the rent and get out. Well, you increase the rent on me, my pay is still 15, 16, 17, you know, maybe $13 an hour. And my family structure is I have maybe 3-4 kids, you know, I may not be married, I could be married, and you know, because we know that the household income here in Louisville, Kentucky, in this state, when it's black, is less than $25,000 annually a year compared to white families. That is a problem. We have to do better. We have to fix it. You have families that have grew up in the West End and in these areas, Smoketown, California, in these areas where they feel comfortable, where they feel safe. This is all they know. And they're able to get back and forth on TARC. It's a safe haven for them to stay in their own neighborhoods. And no one should be pushing anyone out because of the gentrification. And so the homeless problem here is unbelievable. Metro Council, we have to redirect our funds somewhere else. Where is the emergency dire need? What are the problems that we need to take care of right now that we need to address? Where is our budget? You know, every Metro Councilman has discretionary funds. As far as discretionary funds, we need to keep advocating and working with Frankfurt and legislating to say, hey, we need this amount of money. Or if we get this amount of money, this is what we need to use it for. So yes, we have to be advocates. We have to be advocates for those who cannot advocate for themselves, that are powerless. And so, as you can see, one of the things I'm so passionate about is the homeless populations. I have so many stories where I have worked hand in hand with homeless families, crying in their cars, from just glad to have a meal. You know, I remember I was at church one time, it was a church function, and someone literally dropped a young lady. I'll never forget this. She had a newborn baby, a 2-year-old son, and they dropped her off in the middle of the night at church while we were having church service. She didn't have anywhere to go, didn't even have any money. Like, literally just dropped her off, bags, everything she completely had. I guess they felt like, oh, well, you know, the church is safe. And they dropped her off. And I'm like, oh my God, you've got to be kidding me. Like, wow. The baby didn't have any formula. The baby's diaper was sold. You know, I was like, oh my, this is crazy. And this is a young mother. We have so many young mothers. And this is what I'm talking about. They need help. And so thank God I was able to, because I had to call around for help. And thank God I was able to take her down there to the shelter, to the family shelter. But they had to make room for her. They had to make room for her. And he had to go back and walk back into the shelter to see if there was any space. And he said, you know, and I'll never forget this. He said, we really don't have a lot of space, but I'm going to make space for this young lady because she has a newborn baby. A newborn baby.
Yeah.
I took her to the shelter, and this is a problem.
Sure. So, Anisha, let's move on here. There's another issue that probably is very close to your heart. So, the Metro Council representative, you will represent several neighborhoods, California, Portland, Parkland, mm-hmm. Russell, that will be impacted by the West End TIF program. West End TIF program stands for Tax Increment Financing. The West right. End TIF program, a law passed by the Kentucky state government, is designed to help Louisville West End residents fund startup business. Kentucky state government will provide matching funds to help people start new businesses in Louisville's West End. Sounds like a great idea. But the West End TIF program has become somewhat controversial. A Courier Journal article titled, quote, Louisville's Urban League releases array of recommendations for controversial West End TIF, end quote, and penned by Bill Colvin, July 22, 2022, points to several issues. The journal article is based on findings from a report by the Louisville Urban League. The Louisville Urban League, as well as many West End residents, are concerned about several issues. First, gentrification, and you mentioned this. New businesses displacing current residents. Second, funding of the TIF program will require an increase in property tax. If West End property taxes are increased, landlords could raise the rent, which could force working class families out of their resides if they can't afford the increase. You've talked about that. Third, as new businesses are established in Louisville's West End, it is noted that many of these startup businesses are being created by people who are not from Kentucky or Kentucky's West End residents. Finally, there is a transparency issue. West End residents complain that the TIF goals and objectives have not been clearly explained and that there has been little input opportunity from West End residents. Do you support the West End TIF program? What changes would you need to see so that the program truly benefits West End working class community?
Okay, so let's have this conversation. This is an important conversation. First thing we need to do is we have to have an open dialogue, build that connection with our residents and Metro government. Metro government is their responsibility to inform the citizens of the West End, putting that information out there, whether it is flyers, websites, phone calls, newsletters, emails, church functions, community events, using the libraries to have meetings. I know they've been doing that for a while, but apparently it is not working very effectively. I know a lot of residents are very upset. They're frantic. They are nervous. They're not very clear on what is going to happen to them in their homes, especially when it comes to the elderly residents. One thing that stands out to me, why are we having conversations or businesses with companies on the outside of the city when it comes to housing. It's on the back of my mind, it's like it's a stranger effect, right? Like stranger danger. There's like red signs, you know, red signs, red alerts. And I think that's how some of these residents feel. They're very confused. I think a lot of us are still trying to the objective. What I do see and what I do know is that a lot of families, especially a lot of Black families, have lost their homes in the West. I have talked to some of these families. They didn't know how and where to go get the help to even keep their home. They felt like the legal system or the court system or the Commonwealth did not serve them any type of justice. They didn't have enough savings or fundings, or the banks weren't working with them, or the sheriffs wasn't working with them. So a lot of residents have lost their homes. The gentrification process is happening, whether people are aware of it or not, but it is. Outside companies are coming in. They're pushing out small businesses and Black families. And by doing that, if you have companies from New York, Texas, or these different states buying up homes from 300 to 500 properties within just a specific area, they have no connection to the community, don't even understand the historic value of it. And they put in all these criterias and guidelines in place. And if our state is backing up these companies when it comes to, okay, well, you don't have to accept these vouchers or these Section 8 programs. Now you're bringing families in, which is okay, because working class families is what we want. We want professional working class families. So you have a lot of new development that is coming in. You have the Goodwill opportunity. So you have Norton coming in. You have a lot of retail and businesses coming in. There's a new restaurant that's getting built next to Kroger's. So you have your positive and negatives with this, right? So when you bring income in and you bring businesses in and retails and hospitals, create a revenue and a tax base in, basically, because a lot of people have been advocating for the West End to be its own city. So you, like I said, you have your pros, cities within the city, like, you know, Middletown and Shively, all these different cities within the city, within the counties, right? So they have their own mayors and they able to have to make more decisions. So the pros is, with the businesses coming in and you have companies and corporations coming in and the new schools and the new development and the new child care programs, right? It brings in revenue. It brings in working dollars from working families to professionals. People want to come in. They want to come in because, like I said, District 4 is very culturally diverse. Our city and our county is growing, right? We have a big, huge immigrant population from, you know, Cuban, the Spanish community. So the face of the city is changing. The culture is changing. This district is changing. So you have a lot of families that are moving to the city for a quality of life, for opportunity, that are actually going to work. So at this point, we have to remember what is already done is already done. What we need to do as families and what African Americans need to do that live in these neighborhoods is be prepared. Find out where you can get help. Go to the meetings. Get the information. Get your legal help. Find out about how to secure bonds. Secure your investments. Find out who is calling the shot. You have to protect your investment, and that is your home. So make sure that you have all the resources and tools and everything provided to protect your home. I don't think people are saying, hey, get out, get out. We don't want you here. Get out, we don't want you here. I don't think that's the situation. I think they just want to make sure that they protect their investment, which is their home, their families. That's what we need to do. It is Metro government's responsibility, it is the state's responsibility to make sure that these people are able to stay in their homes. Because we know that once all these things come in, the property value will go up. But some of these people, they may want to sell their homes. So if the property value goes up, some people, they may not want to stay in their homes. They may be retired. They may want to sell their homes and, you know, move to Florida or to Atlanta, or maybe move closer to relatives or daughter or son, and live a happy life. But some people, they want to stay there until they die. And it is our responsibility to make sure that these people are able to stay in their homes and their rights are protected. and our, you know, even what goes down to the tenant association. We have to provide resources, more funding, help, support, and legal support for our homeowners, the tenant association, and everyone that's involved. And these people that sit on this TIF board need to be more transparent. They need to be more truthful. They need to put that communication out there for everyone to understand. When I call, it should not go to voicemail. And when I send an email, their residents shouldn't have to wait for weeks. So I know that the Westin Partnership, I believe, the TIF board, the office moved into the Tony Levy's building. People need to know that. I believe they had a grant opening. Don't get me wrong, I'm not sure if they already had the grant opening or not, but that was open, you know, open to the public. So people need to know if they have any concerns that they're on Broadway. This is the office, their office hours. It is very concerning. We don't want to be like another New York. We don't want to be in like a Chicago with all the you know, with the rail system that is coming. The two talked about the project, the 9th Street project. So we want to make sure that we're protecting our businesses, especially Black minority owned. We're already living in areas where there's less than 1% of Black businesses. Walnut Street history. Little Africa. These are some thriving before the riots and thriving community of Black families with wealth and businesses that own businesses down in the West End. Some of them are still around today. Like some of the, you know, we have cleaners, shoe stores and things, restaurants. There are people that are still around today, even down to the funeral homes that are owned by Black businesses.
Anisha, before you get into that, let me ask this next question because that's really applicable to what this question is about. So there was an article published by the Courier Journal titled, quote, Reimagine 9th Street, and you kind of mentioned this, Efforts Advances, penned by Matthew Lewinsky, February 27th, 2024. It explains the Reimagine 9th Street project is now in the planning stages since most of the funding has been acquired. So the Reimagining 9th Street project was introduced by former Mayor Greg Fisher in 2016. The purpose of the project was to reunite downtown Lowell with Lowell's West End and to eliminate what's known as the 9th Street Divide. And the director of the Center for African American Heritage, Achman Burton, explained on Solutions to Violence Radio February 19th that Lowell's Walnut Street, now known as Mohammed Ali Boulevard, was once a thriving African-American business community. The article titled, quote, How Racism is Built into Lowell's Infrastructure, penned by Julia Mattingly, October 1st, 2021, and published in Lowell's Political Review, explains that urban renewal implemented by white urban planners during the Eisenhower administration raised many of the African-American businesses along Wall Street, and you talked about this, allegedly to make room for the construction of I-65 and the 9th Street exit, later named Roy Wilkins Avenue. Black-owned businesses, as well as African-Americans, were forced to move west of Roy Wilkins Avenue. Neighborhoods east of 2nd Street, both north and south of Broadway, were also razed, and Black families forced to move west of Roy Wilkins Avenue. Most of the Black-owned businesses that were forced to move in the 1960s as a result of urban renewal did not survive. They didn't survive the move. The urban renewal that occurred in the 1960s explains why most African-American families now live in Lowell's West End, and Lowell remains a racially divided city. So the Reimagine Project is an effort to reconnect Lowell's West End with downtown and more affluent neighbors. So, but Denisha, you have listen to people from your district, from District 4, that don't understand how this reconnection is going to work, the 9th Street project is going to work. Can you talk about what their concerns are?
Yeah, actually, I went to the meeting and received a lot of information and literature and watched videos and talked to developers and architects myself. Because I wanted to know, especially running for this district, I wanted to know what was happening, what the plans were, the layout, what the changes were, and how it was going to affect everyone that lives past the 9th Street corridor. What I heard was a lot of frustration. Even I had some conversations with some Shawnee Neighborhood Association. There were some members there and they were very puzzled. A lot of them were elders. You know, I'm 46. A lot of these members were 70s and their 80s. So they know the history. It was very important to them that their livelihoods and their homes and their historical value was protected. I would tell you, my grandmother, she passed a couple of years ago, but just to think if she was in that meeting, how appalled she would be. It's like, I guess, a shocker, especially when it came to when they talked about the streets, the two lanes, going down the four lanes, the two lanes, and then the parking meters. Because I live downtown and we live in Old Louisville. It's kind of pretty much kind of the setup, right? You have residents that have the meters in front of their homes. But just imagine putting meters all the way down Broadway. You have Chestnut, Muhammad Ali. There's meters in front of people's homes that never had meters in front of their home. And a lot of them were upset because they don't even have driveways and they don't even have garages. And that's what they were like, wait a minute, hold up. You're going to put a meter in front of my home and I don't even have a driveway or a garage? Oh, yeah. A lot of them were very upset, highly upset. And I would be too. You had some people wondering why project costing so much, whether it's $30 to $40 million less than some, a lot of people want to know, why did this project cost so much? Where is the funding coming from? And where is it going? There were people that also said that there was no black contractors or black developers that were involved in this project. I mean, hearsay, but I'm just kind of, what people were discussing. I was just talking about basically where the black contractors are. Will the jobs come back to those who live in the neighborhoods? Will there be job and career opportunities where black contractors be involved in this plan? Those are some of the things that people were upset about. I don't think it was more or less of the vision itself. It was basically how it was laid out without them really even knowing or understand without their vote. It's just another way of basically saying, well, here we come. We're going to do this anyway. And not involving the community, not getting a vote on it, not getting their hearsay. It's taking the power out of the people. And that's where people are frustrated. They're upset because you're taking the power out of my hands and out of my control, especially where I lay my head and I built my home and own my own home. And so this we have to remember, especially as developers and metro government, that yes, you may necessarily have the upper hand, but it's still not okay to just bulldoze someone's life away, a bulldoze their home without giving them any type of respect or sitting them down at the table in communication, have that open opportunity for them to have a say-so. And I think that's where people are upset. They feel like they don't have a say-so, that it doesn't matter, especially when we talk about the history of the 9th Street divide, right? So all this was done purposely to make sure that the systematic racism discrimination was in place, from the redlining to the banks to the way the projects and things were centered and how people were not able to thrive. So you have a systematic racist laws in place, policies in place in just one particular area where people weren't able to thrive. So those are some of my thoughts on the 9th Street project. I hope that they give it some more time and thought to be respectful of those who have built their own lives and invested their homes and businesses in that area. Even with when it comes to minority black-owned businesses, there's still not a lot. Of course, I know I talked about that I have a big, huge network of entrepreneurs that I work with, black-owned businesses and women, minority-owned businesses. And there's still a lot of people, they may have home businesses or online businesses or, there's vendor events, but there's still not a lot of brick and mortars. And then it even goes down to, even when you talk about the Derby, how they stopped the the vendor events down in Derby where Black businesses can thrive, even the small business along the Broadway area. So if everyone on the other side of 9th Street, they have opportunities to make money or a better quality of life and able to, because there's income barriers. Still, a lot of people still can't even get bank loans, you know, because of the credit or their income.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Denisha, let's talk about the Republican state legislature that is now in the process of passing its version of the three strikes and you're out law. The U.S. News and World Report article titled "Any Crime Bill Featuring Three Strikes Provision" was approved from GOP-led House panel in Kentucky, quote unquote, states, quote, "sweeping legislation that would keep felons locked up after a third violent offense won approval Thursday from a Kentucky House committee that heard mixed reviews about its potential to combat crime," end quote. If this bill becomes law, it will imprison folks for life if they are found guilty of committing three violent crimes. Do you agree with the Republican three strikes and you're out law, or do you have a different plan for dealing with those who have committed violent crime?
No, I do not agree with the three strikes. No, I do not. Because you got to remember that this is a Commonwealth state, right? This is a Commonwealth state. And you have people sitting in prison for life sentences that are not guilty. They're still fighting for freedom. You have people that have died on death row that have been innocent. There are people that are still fighting for their innocence way before the 60s that have still been in prison ever since they have been incarcerated at a young age. The laws were, when I say the laws were not made for us, it was not systematically made for us when it comes to brown and black and the poor. This is a classism issue. Because if you think about felonies right now, it could be child support. Say, for instance, if I'm behind on child support, that could be a felony. Then I can't maintain a job because I have a felony background. If I decide, for instance, if you think of it as someone has a domestic violence situation, depending on what is involved, that could be a felony. Mental illness. What type of crime that was committed, that's a felony. So we have to change the law depending on what type of class felony, whether it's A and B. We have to change the classes of felonies. What you consider a felony, what you consider a misdemeanor. Because someone can get felonies just like that, and then you're sitting in prison for the rest of your life. And I'm not talking about the violent crimes, horrific crimes, where people should be in jail. They should be in jail for life. But I'm talking about that sometimes life situations are just not working out for you. And the decisions that you've made, you can be given a second chance with the right resources and tools and programs in place to help you. And that's why I just solely do not believe in this law. What are we doing here? Are we funding these private jails? Are we just wanting warm bodies in the cells to fund these private jails? And if so, that's inhumane and that's not right. How is that bonding families together? You know how many families will be devastated and crushed and dismantled because of this law? Families and children displaced, especially when it comes to the foster system. I mean, have you thought about that? Like these single family households, if my mother or father or my guardian, someone's going to prison for life, where are these children going to go? We already help the social workers and caseworkers that we have. So it's just going to be a trickling effect. We can't just solve our problems locking people away for life. It is inhumane. It is racist. It is a systematic problem. And our laws have to change. These policies have to change. Make it make sense. And that's why I stress to people how important it is to make sure that you are voting for the right candidate, for the right leadership, to make it make sense.
Okay. So, Denisha Rivers, there are 7 other candidates now running for Metro Council from District 4. Why are you the best candidate? What makes you better than any of the other candidates?
The proof is in the pudding. The information is out there on who's been executing, who's been getting things done. Check my history of what I've done for the city and for families. I'm on social media. I'm on Facebook. I'm on X. I'm on Instagram. have a website. It will tell you everything about who I stand for, my values, and what is important not only for me, but for your family as well. I have dedicated for a long time my energy, my time, and I have a track record on what I stand for and what I believe in. Some of these other candidates cannot say the same. You know, I'm born and raised in Louisville, Kentucky, so I know how important it is to keep continuing that investment back into the city and where we're headed. And I just want to make sure that I can not stress the importance of checking out the history of the candidate in this race. What have they done for you? What have they done in the community?
Okay. All right. Fair enough. So at this time, we want to invite anyone else who may be running for Metro Council from District 4 to appear on Solutions to Balance. If you're interested, we'd love to have you on the program. Just contact us at solutionsbalance18@gmail.com.
Before we leave you today, we want to put in a plug for Forward Radio. March 30th begins our yearly pledge drive. WFMP 106.5 FM is a non-commercial FM radio station. We feature 12 national programs like the Ralph Nader Hour, Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman, Law and Disorder, and Economic Update. We also feature 23 local programs like the Climate Report, Sustainability Now!, On the Edge with K.A. Owens, Truth to Power, Critical Thinking for Everyone, Solutions to Balance, Economic Impact, and many more. All of this comes to you commercial free. We can do this because all of our producers, as well as our staff and board of directors, are volunteers. None of us make a penny for what we do, even though we are classified by the FCC as citizen journalists because we work for free. We work hard at producing quality programming because we know you, our listeners, expect professionalism. However, we do need a revenue stream in order to keep the lights on. We have studio rent to pay, equipment to purchase and maintain, and licenses to purchase. So we do need your help. Our pledge drive begins March 30th and culminates in our Forward Radio Party April 13th. This year, our goal is to raise $7,000. You can donate by visiting our website at forwardradio.org and clicking on Donate. There will be gifts for generous donations. We will be gifting t-shirts, hoodies, calendars, coffee mugs, all featuring the WFMP 106.5 logo. You don't have to wait until March 30th. You can donate right now. Simply visit our website at forwardradio.org and click on Donate. We know you appreciate in-depth analysis brought to you via scholarly opinions as well as the voices of community leaders whose voices are amplified only because of Forward Radio. Your generosity is greatly appreciated. Finally, we want to invite you to our birthday party. WFMP 106.5 FM wants to celebrate 7 years of on-the-air community all-volunteer radio. WFMP Radio began broadcasting April 9, 2017. To celebrate that occasion, we are planning an in-person party to be held at Logan Street Market, located at 1001 Logan Street. There will be food and drinks served by the Logan Street Market, special guests, music, and contra dancing. The celebration begins at 5 p.m. April 13th. You are invited.
Listeners, we're out of time. Our guest today has been Denisha Rivers. Denisha Rivers is currently running as a Democrat for Metro Council from District 4. Denisha Rivers, thank you for appearing as our guest on Solutions Balance. Our program that features Denisha Rivers will be repeated March 19th and 20th. Solutions Balance airs on Mondays at 5 p.m., Tuesdays at 8 a.m., and Wednesdays at 6 a.m. You can listen live stream by visiting our website at forwardradio.org and clicking on Listen Live Now. The Solutions to Balance program featuring Denisha Williams will be placed in our archives. To listen via our archives, just visit our website at forwardradio.org, scroll down to Program Archives, and then scroll down to the Solutions to Balance program that features Denisha Williams. Please respond to us with your thoughts and suggestions by visiting us at solutionsofbalance18@gmail.com. We'd love to hear. For Solutions to Balance Radio, I'm Jim Johnson. Our editor is Carolyn Brooks Johnson. Thanks for listening.